19th of November with Dr. Issa at Utamishi House in Dar es Salaam. And before we start the interview, I would just like to ask you that you've given your consent for me to interview you and record you.
Yeah, if there was no consent, you couldn't have been speaking to me now.
Okay, thank you. So I would just like to begin this conversation by, could you tell me about what you do now, what your job is now, and what jobs you've had in the past that have led you to this position?
Presently, I work as the director for human resource development in this office. I previously was teaching at university, Mzumbe University in Morogoro, and my job at present is about supporting initiatives within the government to improve capability of leadership.
Okay, thank you. I'd now like to ask you some questions about training programs and capacity building in the Tanzanian civil service. What sort of initiatives do you support that you've just described? Could you talk to me about them a bit?
Yeah, given the mandate of this office,
the public service management.
You are supposed to give guidelines in how best to carry out training needs assessment within government, develop training plans, and the implementation. So we develop guidelines, we issue them, we make sure that ministries understand how to use them, and we also follow up on implementation.
So have you attempted during this reform process to identify gaps in capacity within the ministry, and how did you go about doing this?
Yeah, there are instruments we use, we have developed and we have used. And actually, we are continuing to make people know how to use them, and they're using them, and we develop them ourselves without any help from external consultants, because we have adequate background to developing them. And we develop them and assist this institution, sometimes in groups, to be able to use those guidelines and arrive at a program for training their staff.
And when you've done these needs assessment programs, who was involved? Was that only people in your office? Were there other people involved?
The people from my office are responsible for initial development of these instruments. And later on, usually call people in workshops. They discuss them, and ultimately the documentation get approved. And in terms of the use, now the people who use are the people who manage employees in their own institutions.
What involvement do you have with the line ministries, the MDAs, in developing these instruments?
Like I said, we invite them in workshops, and we share with them the ideas behind probably the guidelines for identifying training needs. We emphasize to them the importance of capacity building and the role of training in that. We also get their opinions in how best they think that particular activity is going to be handled. We get their opinions on the guidelines and the instruments we develop. And then we use their opinions to kind of complete our work in terms of designing instruments which could be used. And then after that, we agree with them in manner of use. And we speak to them and we require them to bring representatives from responsible units who we sit together and we go through the instruments together in a pilot manner. We could, at least in one ministry, we could try the use of those instruments in one department, get the results, and then use it more widely within that particular ministry. But at the same time, given the change in public sector reform program in Tanzania, this institution now are supposed to demand those services from us, and therefore we sat with them and they were able to identify areas in which they think it's important to the institution. And the previous exercise kind of among 25 ministries, 13 of them thought that they need extra capacity and support in developing training needs, in carrying out training needs assessment, and developing training plans. And they have been sending now their requests to us, and we facilitate them by sending them the guidelines. We discuss it together. We tell them the manner of use, because it's important and when deciding on an individual need, the individual is involved, his supervisor is involved, the head of department, if it's not the supervisor, also is involved. And then there should be some consolidation at the end. So we make sure that at least for each unit, they are representative in now translating the need into a training plan. Because identification of need is done through an individual. They ask questions relative to their performance. We have a system of 180 degrees performance feedback. It's not 360. So we use that in terms of as a support to thinking about what capacity gaps there is, including opinions of supervisors in relation to that employee, additional to performance feedback.
Right, and are you involved in conducting any of the training programs or your department?
My department, and kind of within the public sector reform program, also is responsible for a key result area, which is called leadership development. And in that case, we plan for leadership development programs and implement them on behalf of the government. Therefore, we identify key areas for capacity building through training, exposure programs for our leaders from senior to very top leaders, And then we arrange them and we ensure that there is good participation and the use of whatever that comes from the attendance in those particular programs.
Where are those programs held?
The programs are held within the country. They are also held outside the country. Countries which we send some of our leaders are those countries which kind of are part of the East and Southern African Management Institute, ESAMI. ESAMI is a regional training institution, and it undertakes its programs within the East and Southern African region. So some of our leaders go to programs in another country so that they can be together in a study environment with people of the same caliber from other countries. But at the same time, we also prefer sometimes to give experience to our leaders to learn from the East Asian countries, because with those countries, the experience of development, kind of you can see how it began. It's difficult with Western countries, although leaders also go for capacity building in those countries. But it's not very much easy to show somebody the historical development of particular kind of development. For example, if you go to, let's say, Singapore, you can easily learn from them through the experience, because it will only take you some 50 or 60 years back. In the developed world, to see where it all began is much more longer. And therefore, the experiences might not matter, but the practice matters, because even those countries which are developing, the East Asian countries, they learn from the West and they adapt to their own environment. And therefore, the practice, you can learn them in the Western world in terms of how things should be, but how things are done to be how things should be, then you can see where the level of development is different, but not very much different.
Okay, this is part two with the interview with Dr. Issa. Did you have on-the-job training? Did you bring people in to do training with people as they were working? Or was it mainly done in classrooms and at workshops?
On-the-job training is a very continuous event. You know, it's not like having the concept of having apprentices. This is not the government offices do not provide probably enough room for apprenticeship or similar to that. People learn because they work together. People learn because they get moved from one position to another, and it's done purposely. And people learn because it's emphasized that you should work with your subordinates, and again, it's not about emphasis. The way work is structured within the ministries, the only way for you to do your job properly is to work with the people who are working with you. And therefore, that basically is on-job training, regardless of whether it is formal or informal. So in addition to placements, which happen, and redeployments, people work together. You have to, unless you want to be declared incompetent. And we work with junior officers, and we depend on them. And they also depend on us because we have more experience and we have a much more wider understanding of issues given, and we handle more than they do. So our job training is very much significantly emphasized in different government documentation in relation to leadership development. And we think this area is going to be given more emphasis within the reform program, which actually is a new phase which has started in 2008. And because the government intends also to kind of start what it calls fast tracking into leadership. And the focus of these efforts is going to be junior to middle-level personnel who are seen to have caliber to and potential for future leadership. That once is established, then the on-job training is going to get a more formal touch.
How has your department changed in the reform process? Was there a human resource development department before, or is it a new?
Previously, given the history of this country, this particular office was responsible for making sure that the government has enough local personnel. And what it was doing until early 1990s is to be able to identify needs of personnel in the country, given economic growth and other changes in population statistics, and then deploying them. At that time, the government was the biggest employer. It is now, but at least the government does not anymore own or undertake business activities. At the time, there were public corporations, and together with central or the civil service, the government was responsible at creating professionals and also deploying them. And this ministry was responsible for that until when the reform program started, that began with the civil service reform program in the year 1999 seems to be very close, because at that time we had the first management and employment policy, which kind of was indicative of change in how the government now considers its staff or kind of manages the employment processes, because that policy now kind of transformed government institutions now to be employers. The employment activity was handled centrally at that time, and this particular office was responsible for that activity. But once the employment practices were decentralized, then it became important now for the government to be able to consider the issue of leadership capacity development, because that entails the leaders need to have more capability in management, not only in matters which are specific to those ministries, but also in matters related to in management of the human resources. The civil service reform, actually, although it started by acknowledging the fact that capacity development is important and that there are some key skill and knowledge areas which actually are needed to be strengthened, it only identified those particular needs and a number of training programs were carried out. But the movement from that particular reform program to the now public service reform program, which now PSRP rather than civil service reform program, then it was considered now probably we give leadership development a little emphasis within the overall framework. And that's when the Department for Leadership Development was created, actually. The same organ was responsible for the allocation of manpower within the country. Now it was transformed into a department which will support capacity building initiatives within government.
Who was the deployment and employment responsibility decentralized to? You describe it being decentralized. Where did that responsibility go?
That responsibility went to every ministry, every executive agency, every local government authority.
It went into the ministries, the executive agencies,
yes,
and the LGAs.
Yes.
How long are your training programs typically?
Long? Yeah, they vary from 2 days, 3 days, to a week, to 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is your relationship with universities and the training schools, such as the Public Service College?
Yeah, Public Service College is very important. And most of the middle-level personnel, they are supposed to be trained by the Tanzania Public Service College. It's also, that institution is also responsible for a number of public service examinations, which kind of are important. It has a mandate of some kind to undertake induction training within the government. That is Tanzania Public Service College. But at the same time, we have been having relationship with universities. And often, when we think a particular program is important, sometimes we invite the universities to seek to run those programs. When we find out that those programs cannot be run by an identifiable institution, so we use them. We use them in many other activities rather than just them facilitating some training. Yes. We use them for carrying out needs assessment, and sometimes in collaboration with external assistance providers. Our development partners might be interested in supporting capacity building in a particular area. We link them with our training institution, the universities, the Tanzania Public Service College. So I think our relationship is good, but we also need to improve the capacity of some institution so that most of the capacity building initiatives, they should be organized in somehow. And by those institutions, in collaboration with us, rather than us organizing them and then them running when we think they should run them. Yeah.
And the people who do the training, are those typically Tanzanians or foreigners?
Any program which is being, most of the programs which are implemented in country, they are being run by Tanzanians. Some programs which kind of involve facilitators from a second country, they often we require them to partner with locals and to run those programs together. That has been the emphasis, and it has been helpful in terms of getting capacity within our institutions to be able to run such programs.
And are the programs given in English or Swahili?
Most programs are given in English, but Swahili is our national language. English is an official language as Swahili, and therefore in facilitation, even in the lecture theatres at universities, some words of Swahili will often be said within the lectures. So we use English often, and it's an official language. But Swahili is also an important language.
Who pays for most of the training?
Training, as I said, the ministries, the executive agencies, they are employers. They are supposed to budget for whatever they are doing, including training of their employees. So in that sense, most budgeting for training is done within those institutions. But at the same time, centrally, there could be some funds to support some central initiatives, or when resources might be needed to augment the resources which those institutions have.
It is often a concern that people who are trained leave the civil service to use their skills in better paid positions in the private sector. Has this been a problem?
Frankly speaking, I don't see it to have been a problem that much, because there's something about the public service that once you join it, leaving it, it becomes a little difficult. Although the salaries are much lower than most or some private sector institutions. The private sector institutions and outside large organizations, the salaries are much lower than the government's. But still, the public service provides opportunity for employment for people with basic university qualifications. And in most of the time, people might feel that they are where they are supposed to be. There's that feeling of satisfaction, which often is there, from my experience. maybe it's not a very long experience, but I've never heard of somebody leaving employment from these ministries, for example, and then going out and joining private sector institutions. I'm not sure if that is because outside there is more competitive and people cannot compete. I'm not sure, because employees in the public service also undergo training and they are supported to go for master's degree, MBAs, and sometimes abroad. And therefore, they tend also to have adequate capabilities. And any time somebody upgrades himself in some way, either by acquiring another degree, that's when somebody might think of moving, but they do not. Yeah? If they think of moving, they move within the government itself, because the executive agencies sometimes they have some attractions, like probably sometimes there's better pay in the executive agencies. Somebody who has aspirations can move up and get a job which could be more satisfactory in terms of pay and the other issues of responsibility and cognition. So there's not much problem. You could say the government or the public service is still the biggest employer. And for that matter, outside there's less competition to deserve attracting people from the government to the private sector. Maybe that's the issue, but it's not a problem as yet.
Right. How often do people get trained in the public service?
The question is a little broad in the sense that how often? As often as the resources allow, but there's a little emphasis on training, which kind of people are very much interested in learning. People are very much interested in getting extra qualifications and developing themselves. So there's so much need than can be met. Therefore, it's different from where you're coming from, because here, if somebody has a first degree qualifications, he certainly feel incomplete until he gets a second degree. Therefore, it means more cost to him if he pays for himself. So if the institution pay for him. And for that matter, it can also affect the frequency in which somebody could have access to training, but it does not make him fail to get some training.
How have you been measuring the outcomes of your leadership development?
The outcome is measured in many ways. For people who have been in government for a long period of time, or have been working with government, supporting this particular government, they can realize how the public service in Tanzania is more responsive and receptive. Tanzania is a country where a lot of this stakeholder involvement initiatives in Africa is very much advanced. The private sector, the NGOs, the development partners, they all play very fundamental roles, and they can do that if they have people they can partner with. And these are the public service personnel. And that is general. And we have public expenditure reviews yearly, and any policy cannot be developed without consultation with stakeholders. And these are developed by the local personnel themselves, the public service employees. And then they are brought out for the masses to be able to deliberate upon, on the basis of that, then something comes out as a government on a process. That must entail capacity. A year ago, we did an impact assessment for the capacity initiatives which we handle centrally. And we were able to discern that there have been significant movement in terms of the use of acquired knowledge over time.